Welcome to Michigan HockeyCast 4.4, where we finally got our snow tires out after watching that Lawson ice sheet. Originally, I was going to start talking to you about NCHC TV because we got to experience it again for one of the two games this weekend. But then I thought, well, all we do is complain about like streaming services, and that's not really fair. So let's talk about something that's like actually on the air. So I wanted to ask you about the Manning cast. Have you been watching that at all? I know there's only been four.
Not really. I have been kind of tuned out of the NFL this year by and large. So
have you seen any of the clips or like
I had it on one time. It seemed kind of like you watch other people watch the game.
Okay. But you watch,
which I know is like
four Super Bowls.
Yeah. Which I know is like, it's just like a big thing. Like if you've heard about the show in the UK where like, it's like one of the biggest shows there and you just watch other people watch the news and like watch their reactions.
What the news?
Yeah, like or other TV programs, like whatever they're watching, you just watch them. It's called, I think, like Gogglebox. It's a huge thing in Britain, but
maybe Brits are weird. I don't know. Hey, maybe that's our quote.
Yeah,
that's for you, Seth. That goes right out to Seth. All right. So the point of what I wanted to say is last night they had Marshawn Lynch on, which went about as you would expect it to go. And then they had on Tom Brady, which I thought was a really great decision because you had Manning and Brady going at each other, giving each other barbs, and then breaking down like a 2-minute drill. And those are probably like two of the best quarterbacks to not only just ever play, two of the best football players to ever play, but two of the best at doing that specifically. And I just tweeted something like, I mean, I could literally sit here and watch football and listen to them talk about it for hours. So who would you want to hear talk about football? Like, are there two better people that you would want to listen to have them have a conversation about football? I mean, I think the answer is probably no. I mean, maybe some of like the old school guys if you want, but
definitely like, no one from the Lloyd Carr era. That's but
well, it doesn't have to be Michigan. It could be anyone. I like, you think of the two of the best like football minds in terms of from quarterbacking.
Yeah, and they're definitely, I mean, what I've heard is that they're quite good at it. What the thing you find a lot of times though is that like the people you think are going to be very good are not. And like,
yeah,
I mean they have Gretzky now on TNT, but like,
but is he a great hockey mind or is he just like player?
Well, he was a phenomenal player because of his mind, but
okay,
just like isn't very interesting on TV and like isn't very descriptive in like how he breaks stuff down and like isn't
so
quite that. So like my point is the best person to ever listen to for football could be like some punter who got cut from a team 10 years ago.
You never McAfee.
Yeah, you never really know. Sometimes the great analysts aren't who you think they are. That's what I'll
say. All right, that's fair. Now let's switch it over to like what we're actually doing and who would you want in like a cast to watch hockey, because you said not Gretzky. What about somebody like Crosby? He's known to be a really like cerebral player.
Yeah, Crosby could be an interesting one. I haven't seen Messier on, but I know he is on, I think, TNT too. Maybe okay. He's on ESPN. He could be an interesting one. You know, any player who was the sort of like a brilliant hockey mind is who you would instinctively think. I mean, Datsyuk, right. If he could speak sort of understandable English.
Do you trust your eyes to Dr. Romani?
Yeah, I know that's where you're going. That would be an interesting one. Nick Lidstrom was on the Wings broadcast a week ago, and I thought he was pretty interesting. And obviously being Swedish, his English is miles better than a Russian's. So those are ones in my mind. It depends on like if you're really looking for analysis or are you looking for entertainment or a balance of the two.
Well, that was
because
the great thing about,
because I think Mickey Redmond is a decent analyst, but he's also just very entertaining, and that's like why Red Wings fans love him as the color guy.
Okay.
I mean, the other night, if you were watching against the Blackhawks, they come back from commercial and he asks Ken Daniels, "So Ken, you know, what do you call that like other name that Eminem has?" And Ken Daniels just like Marshall Mathers? And he's like, no, Slim Shady. and Ken Daniels is like, okay, what? And he's like, yeah, I found this out one time, like 20 years ago, I got a painting signed by Eminem, but it wasn't signed as Eminem or Marshall Mathers. It was signed as Slim Shady. And that's when I learned.
Well, that's a very different kind of entertaining. That might actually be in sort of the Marchand era of like entertaining. Where he spent last night talking about how many shots of Hennessy he took before football games.
Well, after the Larkin hit with Matthew Joseph in the game in the season opener, Mickey spent a lot of the broadcast talking about Hudson Bay rules, which I guess was slang in 1950s Canada for like no rules when you play. And he was talking about in the old days of Hudson Bay rules on the pond, that if someone did a dirty hit like that, you just take your stick and swing and hit them in the head.
Like and, the and, Gordie Howe thing.
Yeah, and then it never happened again. So,
I mean, I guess that seems a pretty harsh punishment, but
if there are any interviewers listening to this podcast, here's my advice. Ask Owen Power what he thinks about Hudson Bay rules. See if he knows what that is.
We should get Craig to do it. You think Craig could interview Owen Power? All right, we got to move on to the first game. I don't really want to talk about this, but I suppose we need to. It was an inauspicious beginning, as they actually didn't give up that many goals in the first period, Michigan, in this case. But there were a couple of instances that I thought were predictive of what might happen. I mean, Blankenberg turned the puck over at his own blue line to start the game, and Power actually made a nice play to get back and break it up. But then you had like a kind of a bad play from Truscott where he like whiffed on a check and sort of led to an in zone 3-on-1. I didn't count it as an odd man rush because, well, there was already going to be way too many of those later. But they got really, really close a few times. And then the kicker for me was like Portillo came out of the net and was like trying to clear the puck. And I think it hit Pearson.
Yeah.
Like, they were just like skated right next to each other, and it just seemed like a very discombobulated period for Michigan. And I know obviously Western played well and sort of took it to them, but we hadn't seen them be, they kind of got outplayed definitely in the first period against Duluth and Minnesota State, but they just looked very out of sync, I should say.
So I tweeted this, but I was very glad that Michigan played this series against Western because I thought they added a different dimension on the schedule in that this was a team that played a really physical style. You know, we thought you were going to see that against Minnesota State, and obviously they hit some, but like the way Western was approaching the game was very, very physical. They were finishing checks at any opportunity. So when you are on the forecheck, right, you have an opportunity in that moment to either go for the puck as it's passed, or since it had just been passed, you could still check the guy, even though it doesn't really add anything in theory to the game, and they just got rid of the puck, but it won't be interference because he just passed it. And those are your two options. And pretty much every single opportunity they got, they were deciding to go for the check. And it's, you know, legal hits. That's an option of how you want to play the game. But they were doing that all the time, finishing checks all the time. And we saw Michigan really take the brunt of that in both games. Blankenberg knocked down several times. Ciccolini knocked down. You know, any number of players kept hitting the deck. And Western really pushed Michigan around. And the thing about Western was they played pretty fast, too. They looked decently fast. They looked physical. They looked decently skilled. I thought that was a really good team, and I thought they gave Michigan something a little bit different, and I think Michigan's now going to have to learn how to adjust to that moving forward.
Right. So they sort of outskilled Duluth, and Duluth sort of wanted to skate with them last weekend, and then they faced Minnesota State, and Minnesota State was sort of the older, more defensive, stodgier team that was going to be tough to break down. But this is yet even a different kind.
This is a different kind. This is a team that was intentionally trying to push Michigan around and hit Michigan, knock them down, that sort of thing. And they did it very, very well.
And that's something that Michigan struggled with in the past couple of years. Like Notre Dame has been a little bit like that, and Minnesota's always been tough to kind of move off the puck as well. And Michigan, I think, at times has struggled with that in the past. And it definitely worked for Western on Friday, I would say, for sure.
Yeah.
So towards the end of the first period, maybe a little bit of fortune. You can tell me what you think of this goal. I thought it was a little just kind of unlucky, but Fulp had the defenseman for Western had the puck just inside the blue line, and he kind of flung a nice shot that picked a corner on Portillo. It looked like Portillo never really saw it. Like he was set up and like saw the shooter, and then all of a sudden he had his glove up and the puck was in the net. He kind of turned around like he had no idea. So I didn't necessarily put that shot on him. It was a tricky shot because I think it went through bodies, but like that stuff kind of happens, right?
Yeah, I mean, to me, it just looked like a point shot through traffic, and sometimes those get through. That's pretty standard.
Yeah, so 1-0. And then starting the second, like, this is where it got kind of bad, is the odd man rushes started. And this was a weird odd man rush, because a lot of the ones I wrote down, and this one sort of exemplified it all, but the both defensemen were back. So it wasn't like 2-on-1s, and it wasn't 1v0s like we'll talk about for the Saturday game, but it was a 3-on-2, and the third guy in is the guy that ends up getting the easy goal, because Portillo kind of comes out to face a shooter on the right, and it's just a tap-in goal, and no one on the forwards forwards on the line get back in the play at all. And I think this, you mentioned that this was the Beniers line.
This one was the Beniers line. So before the show, I went back and rewatched all the goals from the weekend. And what I noticed was a disproportionate amount of them were goals coming directly off Michigan's attempts to play on the cycle, particularly off of dump and chase opportunities. So what I think happened here is Michigan came out in the first period, got pushed around, got banged around, and decided what they needed to do was to sort of do it themselves and to ramp up their pressure and to try and punch back. So they start sending all three forwards deep in the offensive zone to recover their dump-in opportunities. Well, Western, I thought, did a very good job on the weekend getting out of those situations, passing out Michigan's forecheck, wasn't sealing off the zone, wasn't, you know, keeping the puck in. And, you know, you see this in hockey plenty of times. If you send all your forwards up on the forecheck and deep in the zone and they don't hold the line, they don't keep it in, then all of a sudden that's a rush the other way. And that happened multiple times. Michigan dumps it in, they go hard against the end boards, looking for the check, looking to kind of hit back. And then Western, you know, quick outlet pass by the defenseman up to the forwards. Boom, it's a 3-on-2 the other way. I mean, this happened last year to the Vancouver Canucks all the time. That's kind of the system that they try and play. But Michigan sort of was doing that. They were ramping up their pressure. And I think, honestly, their physicality, that they wanted to send the forwards hard on the end boards to sort of, you know, hit back. And that's not the team that Michigan is.
Yeah, that, I mean, it's good that they tried to play that way to an extent. Do you think, I mean, cause you have to be able to do that at some point, right? Like you can't just only play like a speed and skating game. Like at some point you have to get in the corners and win pucks.
Yeah. I think that it was their first attempt to try and figure it out, and it didn't quite go right, but you know, they can tweak on it and work on it. But most of the time, and for me looking at this goal, it's going to happen with the Beniers line because the guys are so far in the offensive zone. The Beniers line isn't going to like not make an effort to come back. It's they're starting way, 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 way behind the play. And, you know, it's harder to make up ground, especially against a team like Western that had some guys that could skate. So,
I mean, well, this is kind of getting out of what we're trying to talk about here, but it just seemed like Western was a lot. I mean, you mentioned it on the Friday radio show, I think, but Western was a lot better than sort of I anticipated. Like you thought that they would be pretty good, and I agreed, and you look at some of their statistics.
We can talk about that later when we talk about the Big Ten, but I think Western's a really good team. I was impressed with the way they played. I think this might be one of the better iterations of them, and I think they very easily could wind up in the tournament. So
it's 2-0 at this point. Western gets a power play, and this was a weird play because they're moving the puck around the top and it gets to the left side. And then Luke Hughes looked like he has like a seizure or something and goes like flailing and sticks are flying and his legs are flying. And then right as that's happening, a shot from the dot, you can hear the puck hit Portillo's pad. And then he turns around and it's like trickling through and he can't pull it out in time. And it's 3-0. Somebody tweeted at me and was like, you know, do you think that the Hughes, whatever was happening, he's lost his balance and went like flying, distracted Portillo. And that's why the puck went in. And I was like, I mean, maybe, but like, that's a shot that like you have to save, right? Like it didn't pick a corner. You could hear it hit a pad. And I mean, that's a soft goal.
Yeah, that was definitely not a great goal. Nothing else really needs to be said, but you know, it happens.
Yeah. So we kind of skipped over a couple Michigan power plays that have already happened in the first period and then to this point. But I think the point of that also was that, you know, Michigan got, I think, one good opportunity off of their first chance in the first period. But after that, up until probably the next two or three power plays, they didn't generate much. And we talked about this as, okay, their number one option is they try to get it to Brisson on the dot and shoot. And then they've had a couple of other interesting ones where they center the puck from either the point or straight away, and it's redirected through somebody like Kent Johnson or Beniers, who's sitting in the middle. But other than that, there hasn't been a lot of other things that you can definitely see that this power play is trying to do. And Western definitely had them scouted, I thought.
Yeah, I thought Western also did a really good job of denying the zone.
Yes.
On the penalty kill, putting all their guys on the blue line and trying to pressure the entry. They also pressured the puck handler quite a bit, which I think are things you have to do to throw off a team like Michigan, because if you let them get into rhythm and get them really going, then you're going to be in trouble. But I thought they were a well-coached team. In addition to all of the other things, I thought they did well and are good attributes of them. They seemed well-coached.
Yeah, I agree with that very much. So it's 3-0. Michigan gets a power play, and this one actually looks pretty good. They move the puck around and get a few opportunities. KJ had a nice deflection off a power shot. It was saved. And then there was a shoulder save on Blankenberg. And then the power play expires. And this is sort of the thing that we talked about last year, I think, against Minnesota in the tournament, where the Big Ten tournament, obviously Michigan didn't play in the NCAA tournament, where a power play, you and I agree that a power play doesn't really end. It ends based on the time, but it doesn't end until like those killers can get off the ice.
Yeah.
Because they've been skating, they've been diving, they're probably out of energy, and you want to get a fresh unit of five, not just of like random guy with four people on the ice. And Michigan holds the zone really well. Pasta makes a nice play to cut to the middle, dishes a pass to an open Hughes, ironically on the Brisson dot, who then floats one. This was not like a shot. It was almost like a touch pass over diving Brandon Busey. Busey, do we ever figure out what?
No.
Gary? Is it Gary? Should we just call him Gary?
I don't know. It's
Gary. We'll just call him Gary. So Gary's diving across, and he just floats one over into the net, and it's 3-1. Michigan's finally on the board, and you think, okay, maybe they can come back a little bit.
Yeah, but then the next thing happens.
Yeah, then like 3 seconds
right?
later.
I mean, that happened with – they get the goal to go down 3-1 with, like, I think it was about halfway done in the game. So 30 minutes of time. You thought, yeah, there's plenty of time to come
back. And remember
back,
the Lake State game. I mean, that's going to be burned in people's minds, sure.
But then,
So then this is another situation where – and I never didn't get to go back and look. It's very weird. Maybe it was during a change, but – it's a 2-on-2 for Western. The puck is dumped into the corner, and Truscott is in great position and just gets beaten. And the Western attacker gets to the puck in the corner, gets to sort of face everybody or the onrushers. And then the next two guys into the zone after the 2-on-2 are both Broncos. And Wendt slides down the slot, is wide open. He's get hits with a pass and just beats Portillo with a simple snapshot, I think. And I mean,
this was the exact same play as the other goal from earlier. It was a dump in by Michigan with Lambert and Morgan, and same thing. Western got to it real fast, got the outlet pass. The forwards were caught way in the offensive zone up against the end boards. And so, yeah.
The problem that I had with that is that Truscott was in good position.
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure what happened on that end of it. Truscott, I think it looked like he was starting to lose the foot race and then kind of turned it up and then sort of overskated the puck and sort of lost position. And then, yeah, the forwards are caught way up in the zone. Nobody is there to check the other Western players that are jumping up. And then you basically have a 4-on-2 at point blank range.
Yeah. And that's, it was just a little bit frustrating given that it came right after the goal that didn't necessarily get him back in the game, but it kind of brought Yost to life for the first time that evening. And I thought that that Michigan responded to that well. They created a lot of pressure. They had their own, they had a 3-on-2, which is one of their only odd man rushes of the evening. And Busey made two really great saves. It looked like both chances had a chance to go in. He was just really, really good. And that they also had a nice chance on a power play at the end of the second period too. But Busey was just, I thought so. Western outplayed Michigan in a lot of ways, but Busey still managed to steal the show in the second half of this game because Michigan came hard and ends up getting another goal later to get closer. But Busey made, for a game that Western's in complete control of, Busey made a number of really good saves, I thought, at least in the second half of the game.
Yeah, I mean, he looked good to me, and he's got a .919 save percentage now on the season. Last year, he only played 4 games. 889, you know, that's a very small sample. But the year before that, in 34 games, he was a .910 goalie, obviously playing a majority NCHC schedule, and that was a few years ago. So if he's made improvements to his game, I think, yeah, he could absolutely be a very good goalie, and he looked like it this weekend.
Yeah. So KJ gets a rebound in the third period and makes it 4-2, and it looks kind of like Michigan's kind of coming back. But again, Busey just shuts the door. I didn't see a whole lot in the KJ goal. It looked like just a rebound near the post that he jammed in on the side. A nice goal, but more of a garbage goal.
Yeah, it was a bingo-bango goal because...
Bingo-bango? Are you referencing Mickey Redmond there?
Yeah, you get the face-off when Hughes takes the shot, and it was more or less a really good bounce rate to Johnson, and Eve just pokes it in. So, you know, good luck on the bounce, especially because some of the bounces were not as good on Saturday, but.
Well, yeah. And the other note that the I mentioned we talk about is Western had, I think, 5 or 6 odd man rushes. And some of that was a couple of them. I think there were 2 that came when it was 3 or 4-1, but 4 of them came when the game was still within a couple of goals. And that's something that, like, you know, that's just one of the 2 ways I think that Michigan can really kind of blow up their season and lose games is by they're going to have a talent advantage almost against almost everyone. They might struggle against some styles, but giving up power play goals, which happened in this game, they had a second one later, and getting caught out and giving up transition goals are probably the 2 biggest ways that Michigan can just find themselves in holes.
Yeah, well, and the other thing is that they basically eliminated rush chances against in the icebreaker tournament. And just, again, looking at some of the goals that were allowed, I think that the rush goals given up in this game were largely the result of kind of panicking and ramping up forecheck pressure and basically fighting the war where your opponent wants it to be played, right? You always say that you never want the opponent to pick the battlefield. And
right.
Western, I think, got Michigan a little spooked. Michigan decided to try and play Western's game and, you know, didn't go very well.
Western tallies a 5th goal at the end on a power play goal that was more or less irrelevant. It looked like a shot from the point that was deflected in front. The guy was just deflecting. I mean, he's unchecked. My problem about that was he was unchecked. It's 2 power play goals against when I think they were 2 for 5 and or two, no, 2 for 3. They were 2 for 5 on Saturday. So they're 2 for 3 when Michigan had only given up, I think, 3 power play goals all year coming up into that. Their kill was up around the 86, 87 range, and they give up 2 on 3 chances on Friday. Not the best. Those will happen. I was a little frustrated the guy wasn't checked at all. Like, you see that enough, but...
You know, it's tough with the guy in front of the net because you often have this decision. It's basically a matter of how much you want to respect the guy in front of the net, right? So when the Red Wings had Tomas Holmstrom for a gazillion years, the opponent always had to respect Holmstrom because he had the supernatural ability to, you know, with hand-eye coordination, deflect the puck. So you had to put someone there. Other teams, if you don't really respect the guy in front of the net, right, a lot of teams put a guy in front of the net who's just a body and doesn't really have the deflection skill. It's not really what they're known for. They're just there because they take up space.
Yeah.
In a lot of cases, then, no, you don't commit a guy to that player because in that case, when you have to commit a guy to the net front, number one, that's less bodies that can take away passing angles because
right,
no one's passing through that area. And number two, sometimes it's a double whammy where you put a second guy in front of the net and you create more traffic for your goalie. So it's kind of, you know, it's a decision to be made. But if the opponent's net front guy is such a weapon that you have to do it, you have to do it. It's just kind of whatever they decided in their pregame scouting, I think.
There are probably not a lot of guys in college hockey that are –
probably
amazing.
Not.
Yeah, no. In that situation. So we kind of went through all five goals. I mean, I was hearing some chatter up in the press box that day and talking to a few other people, and people seemed to be down on Portillo about it. Did you think that Friday was necessarily a bad game for him? I mean, obviously you don't want to give up that many goals, but how many of those that he gave up are you really expecting him to save?
It's just the one.
I mean, that was my thought too. Maybe the first one, but if you don't see it,
point shot through traffic.
How do you save a shot you can't see?
I very rarely put that one on the goalie. So
yeah. So not a bit of a slamming back into earth after a pretty high flying weekend in Minnesota, and I guess they got grounded by the Broncos, stampeded. I think I said on Friday, but I think that was fair. They were definitely outplayed. That's definitely a hat tip to Western, who came into Yost and was the better team.
I think stampeded is probably the right one.
Okay, we'll go with that.
If you find yourself in the penalty box in Ann Arbor or Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man arguing your case. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul, the Michigan Law Grad, at 248-924-9458 or visit his website at michiganlawgrad.com.
If you ever rip with people want to bust, break out before you get bum rushed at
the Wild Wild West. The first thing that I think is worth mentioning when we get to start talking about the Saturday game at Lawson is, well, there's two ways we could go with this. One, we could talk about the ice, which we'll do in a minute. But the first thing is, I thought it was interesting that Michigan made some personnel switches. And the first one is that Sam Moskevich was out because he took a hit, I think, late in the third period of the Friday game. We didn't mention that in the first segment, but he did not skate on Saturday. And they put Granowitz with KJ and Beniers. And I'm not really sure about that fit. Do you like that fit? Or would you rather have Morgan and his speed?
Yeah, that's a close one for me.
I saw the lines originally. I was like, I'm not sure that Granowitz is the guy that jumps into my mind as someone I'd put with those two. But
I mean, the idea maybe is you get Granowitz's finishing ability as opposed to Morgan.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, that's true. And KJ is known for moving the puck pretty well and getting, if you can get the guy in puck.
And you already have Beniers who can get you through the neutral zone. So
yeah,
that would be the argument.
The other part is that they dropped Ethan Edwards and Keaton Person, and they brought in both Karinen and Summers and that to play the third pairing. And that was kind of interesting to me because you sometimes will see, especially on this Michigan team, they have, you know, 7 to 8 defensemen that you could arguably fit into their top six. but I don't think that they've dropped an entire pair yet.
No, they haven't. I think that they're still juggling some things, and I think they have a lot of guys they want to use. So I wouldn't read too much into it, but it is notable.
I actually, again, you know, Saturday, I didn't look at the time on ice, but I didn't think that Kerenin was bad again. Like, there was not a situation that I saw him and was like, oh, no, what are you doing?
I don't think we've really seen a lot of moments like that from Kerenin. So
I agree. I have no idea what happened in the first 3 minutes because of this game, because I got my Roku out to put on NCHC TV, and it was not listed. So I looked at the schedule on the Roku on the NCHC TV app, and it was the schedule said Michigan versus Western. I went to the games that are live or upcoming, and it was not even on there. So we had to struggle to find a computer and then switch all of the connections. So I did not start watching till about 4 minutes in because I was, I guess, giving NCHC too much credit that they would be able to come up with a live box, I guess.
It was on my NCHC app. So I don't
know why. Streaming services. College hockey streaming services.
Yeah.
But I will say about the Lawson game, I did want to mention that I thought that the camera work was much better than the games in Duluth.
Yeah, and that's probably not an NCHC thing. That's probably whoever's working at the stadium thing.
Was not trying to give us whiplash and throw up.
Unfortunately, they were on ice that had a half-life of about 30 minutes. And by the second half, was a disaster.
So this has to play into it, right? Like, we have to talk about this. Like,
yeah.
Guys fell on every shift.
Yeah, it was real bad. It wasn't as bad early, but by the third period, it was a disgrace.
So I wrote a little bit in my breakdown about how, like, certain groundskeepers in baseball would cut their infield to different lengths years ago.
Oh, yeah.
Based on, like,
Tiger Stadium's was about 3 feet tall. Cut down any grounder.
But other teams would speed it up if you had speed, right? Like, if you wanted to bunt or things like that. Like, there were – so is this something that Western could do to be like, all right, we don't want to have to skate with these guys?
It doesn't really give you that big of a competitive advantage because everyone's going to be falling over. And, like, it doesn't
– Sure, but –
It doesn't force you to really slow down. It just forces you to fall sometimes. So
– But if everyone's falling –
Then it's just a bounce house. So
which is better than a track meet against Michigan?
Maybe, but the thing about playing hockey in a bounce house is it doesn't really it's not very predictive. You know, it's kind of random.
It's true. But like that's weather games, right? Like if you're playing football in a weather game, it definitely benefits the team that's not quite as good, probably. Or do you not subscribe
maybe.
To that theory?
I don't know. Was John O'Korn or Brian Lewerke better?
Well, was Michigan or Michigan State better?
We'll leave that one up to the listeners.
should we figure that out after this Saturday?
Hey, it's hate week, so.
Yeah, it is. which I was really hoping. So last night on the Manning cast, Brady just totally dissed everyone on defense where he was like, do they even have to have meetings? It's basically just a car chasing or dog chasing a car. And Teddy Bruschi was like, Tom Brady's not my friend anymore. And all this stuff. I was really hoping he would work in some like Sparty hate because it's like rivalry week, but he did not. He took the high road. But anyway, so this game is another game of odd man rushes and Michigan gave up a lot this time. Seemingly, they were all on the defense, as I believe there were 4 2-on-1s and 2 breakaways, which are not the good kinds of odd man rushes. Like, you can deal with a 4-on-3. You can't. I mean, 2-on-1s and 1v0s are – they're going to kill you eventually.
Yeah, this was a pretty weird game, pretty open. And, you know, they needed Eric Portillo to come up big in a few occasions, and he definitely did quite a bit.
I mean, he was phenomenal. This is arguably his best game.
Probably.
Given, I don't know.
And
I don't think he had.
You know, that's why I didn't really have an opinion on Portillo on Friday night. But now you take the games of the weekend and it's like, I don't really care that he gave up that one goal on Friday night. Right. Yeah. Like overall, he came out pretty good on the weekend because of the Saturday game.
And the interesting thing is that in my notes for the Saturday game, on those two-on-ones, a lot of them ended up, I think four or five of them ended up in saves. Like, it wasn't like a pass was broken up or they didn't connect or the shot went wide and, you know, you get lucky or that type of thing. It was actually like Portillo stopped it. And that was sort of the thing to me. And you know, that's all you, it's the unknown of coming into this year of like having a new goalie and how good is he going to be? And, you know, what happens when the lights go on and all that stuff? Well, I mean, I feel like I can count the soft goals that Portillo's given up on one hand this year. And maybe I don't even need all my fingers.
Yeah, I think it would only be maybe two.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. So Michigan actually starts this game pretty well. They, after kind of a stodgy start the previous three games, they looked pretty jumpy in the first 10 minutes or so and created a penalty, or I should say a power play, by forcing Western to take a penalty and get a couple nice shots from KJ. And then we have the traditional Michigan goal of Brisson from the Brisson dot, and it's 1-0. And I think I tweeted something like, well, maybe you don't need a plan B because I don't know. I mean, I don't even really know what to really say about it. He has what, three goals from there this year already on the, just on the power play. We're not even talking about in like 5-on-5.
Yeah, it's an absolutely lethal weapon, but you do need a plan B.
Yeah,
I mean, because sometimes it is going to be blocked or the passing lane isn't there. But when you do get it and he gets all of it in his motion, nothing is glitchy or slow. It's a missile.
So, spoiler: Michigan gets four more power plays and they do barely anything on them and they end up 1-for-5. So I want to transition into, is this a coaching fail to some extent
for the power play this weekend?
Yeah, not just this weekend, but overall, like, it's fine that they have that play, but I mean,
do a few other things on the power play too. They've had a few other plays, and the thing was, you come out of the first two weekends at 50%, you're going to have some reversion to the mean. So we need a bigger sample size than this.
Okay, that's fair. I will give you that. So it's 1-0, and I don't have a ton of other notes. For the first period, there was like matching power plays where each team got like 30 seconds, and there was a bunch of 4-on-4, and Portillo made another couple nice saves, bailing out his defense. So going into the second period, this was we've talked about Michigan's high-end talent scoring a lot of goals, but the line four, the grind line for Michigan, generated a really nice goal here as Garrett Van Wy comes down the boards and shoots from a tough angle that when you can shoot from sort of not directly to this side, but from like a 45 degree angle and you can shoot it hard and low, those shots are hard to save and control. And Busey put a rebound right into the slot. Nolan Moyle steps right in and slices one right into the back of the net, and it's 2-0. This is what Michigan needed after a really disappointing crashing back down to earth in Friday. They had a nice start in the first period and capitalized on it with sort of, a fourth line goal. And now it's 2-0. And you're thinking this is exactly where we need to be.
Yeah. You felt in command, to some extent. There were still chances going both ways, but you felt like you were in a good spot and you get your fourth line to chip in there. And, you know, this was a game that you really felt you needed to win. And so you felt like you were in that position, and then things kind of tumble a little bit after that, but it was, you know, mostly contained in the penalty kill. That's pretty much the story of how Western gets back into the game.
Yeah, before they do, Michigan gets their third power play, and this is sort of the start of the not so great day for Luke Hughes as he gives the puck away in a really, and on the blue line, a bad spot, and you get a breakaway for I think Western's first breakaway, and Portillo makes a huge save, but they get a slashing call, I think, at the end where it becomes a penalty shot. And so now you get back-to-back breakaways that Portillo has to make a save, and he stops the penalty shot too.
Yeah, penalty shots surprisingly don't convert very much, kind of like shootout goals. Like, they
It's like 50-50, isn't it? Or 40-60 or something?
It's less than that for the shootout, but...
Is it really? Like yeah, in the NHL?
Yeah, I believe so.
Wow. Is that surprising you?
Well, a lot of guys just don't have a lot of moves. They don't...
Named TJ Oshie?
They all try, yeah, the same thing more or less, and goalies are really good. So... That's another situation where you call upon your goalie to make a big save, then he made a big save.
So if you have a good power play, would you rather have a power play or would you rather have a penalty shot?
I would probably still take the penalty shot.
Okay.
Depending on who it is, obviously. That's a big factor.
That's fair. So like you were saying, it was going to be the penalty kill that gets Michigan's penalty kill that gets Western back into the game as they get their third opportunity and right pretty soon into the this chance for the Broncos. There's a shot from straight away. I couldn't tell if this one hit Portillo or not, or if it hit a guy in front, but the puck kicks right out to a guy sitting on the left wing and he just buries a shot and it's 2-1.
Yeah, well, both of the goals that give up on the penalty kill in this game had really big bounces, and really big bounces right to guys. And the second one bounces to a guy who's able to pass across to an open net. And so it, you know, to some extent was kind of bad luck in that way, in that you don't really expect those sorts of bounces to be going against you like that.
Well, we can talk about the second one too. And maybe this is a little bit different because that was a very similar. I think the goal was scored from pretty much the same spot. The difference being is that was a 4-on-3.
Yeah.
So I feel like defending 4-on-3 power plays are very, very different than defending 5-on-4.
4-on-3, yeah, is a much, much, much more dangerous power play situation, right? That was the whole idea. The Gretzky rule was that the Oilers kept gaming the system to try to get 4-on-3 power plays because you get all that extra space, and if you have a skill advantage, you can really rip a team open.
Yeah, so, and the bummer for me on that is that the tying goal in this game to make it 2-2 comes with like 5 seconds left in the period. So like one clear. And that was something that we can talk a little bit about, but that Michigan struggled with all weekend, I thought, was just getting the puck out. Like they didn't do a good job of puck corralling, winning it, and then getting it out of the zone, either getting a change or forcing an entry, and you know, things like that. But there were not a lot of great kills for Michigan on, you know, I guess there's 8 chances against them. They gave up 3 goals. And I would say that maybe 1 or 2 of them were like decent kills.
Yeah. One thing I thought about the penalty kill was I thought that they allowed the entry pass to not the zone entry, but the entry pass down low to the net front guy way too easily. And so we talked about this earlier. If you're not going to put a guy in front of the net, okay. But you have to, at the very least, cut off the entry pass.
Deny the pass. If you're not going to check the guy, you can't let him get the puck.
Because there were a few times, and they're lucky they didn't score directly on that, where they would just go right there, and the guy has an immediate opportunity to either wrap it around or try to go over Portillo's shoulder and bar down. And you got to stop that.
Starting the third period, Hughes almost gave up his third breakaway. I think it was saved by, I believe it was Morgan that hypotenused someone from the other side where he got back and it was not a breakaway. But Hughes has a lot of upside and he's going to score goals and he's going to have nice passes, but he still has some Quinn in him, as we discussed earlier, that he has a tendency to turn the puck over at the red line or the attacking blue line, and then you have a bad opportunity going the other way.
Yeah, there's still some kinks in the game a little bit with him, but you knew that when you recruited him to Michigan. So,
Yep, because he's definitely going to have games, and he's already had a few goals that have been really nice. He's been a great addition to the second power play unit, which has been maybe not quite as effective, but I think they have two or three power play goals.
Yeah, they've been they've been almost as good as the first unit.
Yeah. The other interesting thing is that Michigan, you know, we talked about last year and into this year, is that, you know, those Beniers line forever shifts where they just get the puck and control it in the zone and wear out the opposing team stranding the defensemen down low and they can't get a change. They didn't really have a forever shift until into this third period, and they finally got one. You could see the puck cycling going well. You could see Michigan moving, looking for shots, getting a couple opportunities. And then this is broken up by like a random matching penalty situation where you have like a interference and then an embellishment was called.
I don't remember exactly, but yes.
And it was very frustrating because finally they established position in the zone, which is something that they'd, you know, had some trouble with over the course of the weekend. And now you're back to 4-on-4, which isn't going to be awful for Michigan because the fewer people on the ice, the more their talent, I think, is going to shine. But still, in that situation, you're like, just let that stuff go if you're going to call them both.
Right. And, I mean, by the end of the period, Michigan was lucky to get through the third period, you know, alive and to get that game to regulation. At least I thought the last 4 or 5 minutes.
Well, they gave up a goal. I mean, it was then taken off the board. I couldn't see this one clearly. I'm sure, you know, people are going to have their opinions on it, but there was a shot from the point that was, I guess, deflected down by one of the forwards. He wasn't right in front of the net. I think he was about halfway from the point.
Yeah, I was stunned that it was taken off the board because there must have been an angle that they were not showing us, because I watched it several times and I'm like, I don't even know where his stick is. Like, we're looking to see if his stick was above the bar, and I can't even see his stick in these two or three looks they gave us. And so I thought there was no way in the world it was getting overturned, but they must have had another angle or had did something to see what I couldn't in terms of just the picture not really being clear enough. But in any case, you know, Michigan catches a break or whatever you want to call that, justice, et cetera.
Yeah.
But they get through regulation alive, which, again, those last 5 minutes, they were really on their heels.
Well, and that was – I have a note here that says more Portillo saves and good chances. So he – I felt like I was writing that down for the better part of the weekend, as he was – constantly, they weren't like grade A, like Hasek rolling saves, but they were chances where you're getting a guy who has a can get into a shot and is staring him down. And Portillo is, I mean, he's huge, right? So he's going to take up space, and his positioning is pretty good, but he's always seemed to be there.
Yeah, again, and I have no real issues with Portillo's weekend. Goalies are going to give up the occasional soft goal, but as long as they're saving a good enough clip of those high percentage chances, then you're going to be fine.
And I definitely think he did on Saturday. I mean, he was okay on Friday, but Saturday, without him, if you have a average to below average goalie, I mean,
Hayden
Western probably
was
trying not to name names, but it's probably 4 or 5-2. I would say.
Yeah.
You had an interesting note to start overtime, is we've gone to just 3-on-3. So that makes it, I guess, regardless of outcome, you're either going to get 55% of the win or 45% of the win, depending on if you score. So it's basically a tie before it starts, except that you get, I don't know, a little bit of pairwise candy.
You basically are fighting over the last two pieces of the pizza, right?
Yeah.
That, like, you each ate most of the pizza and then you are fight over the last two slices.
Is that what you want? Or do you want 5-on-5 for 5 minutes like it was, where a team actually can win the game in overtime and then you can play your 3-on-3 or have your shootout? Or do you just be like, you know what, this is a tie, let's see some cocaine infested hockey for a few minutes and then go home?
I mean, I'm always impartial to 3-on-3. So I don't mind the current system. I'm definitely one who is fine with ties existing in hockey, but, you know, it doesn't make a big difference to me. I mean, especially these non-conference rules, right? It doesn't apply to the tournament. At the end of the road, I don't have a major issue with the way they do it.
So you use some not David words to describe Garrett Van Wy being out to start overtime.
Yeah, I was not a fan of that because you are going to, in this situation, in theory, have the advantage, right? I thought Western had some talent on their roster, but you still are going to have the advantage from an athletic component. 3-on-3 overtime should favor you. I don't know what you're doing with your fourth line on the ice in that situation. The guys that are not the ones who are going to be well suited for this type of game, right? Like, the reason this favors you is that you're the faster team, and also the whole physical thing that Western was doing to you now applies a lot less because there's only three guys on the ice and going for checks is much riskier, et cetera. So why are you putting your slow physical guys on to start the overtime? I did not understand that at all.
Do you think it's because the entire ice was just mush at this point? And so you just wanted the guy that probably isn't going to fall down?
Well, the whole team was wearing their galoshes for this. So.
Yeah, all right.
Just plodding through the snow.
The only other thing that I could think of was that it was going to be a lacrosse-style situation where he tries to win a face-off and skates to the bench.
Yeah, it's possible that you can definitely think about that, but it's not what happened. They let him get out there for quite a bit. And then once they came off, Michigan started dictating play.
Yeah, so Michigan, I believe, had less possession, man, I am exhausted today, than Western did all weekend, combined. But in overtime, Michigan had the only four attempts on net. So Western was equal to or better than Michigan in even strength all weekend. And then once they got to 3-on-3, Michigan, I think, had four attempts on net, including Beniers hitting the post, which was just like, yeah, that's how this game has gone. That's how this series has gone, is you're like, oh, they can finally win the game with their one of their best players, and he hits the post. And which we even forgot to mention that Michigan's only odd man rush in this game was an Owen Power breakaway and a nice move, and he also hit the post. I think they hit like three or four posts over the course of the evening. And yeah, it was just like, this is it. And, you know, they're going to lose because even when they do something right, they get unlucky. But Bortolo then, I believe Yospilt said that he went for a long skate, and that was a good definition, as he like had a continuous loop that he was running until Blankenberg came firing down.
Yeah, he wheeled around the offensive zone for a while until he found Blankenberg, and that's a great guy for that situation because he's able to jump up, and obviously he's got the wicked wrist shot, and he puts a well-placed shot up high over the shoulder of the netminder.
Gary. Are we still calling him Gary?
Unnamed netminder.
And so Michigan wins their 55% of a hockey game off a really nice shot. But they celebrated. And it was nice to, I think, see them come through that Friday game where they got kind of pushed around and couldn't come back, and then played in some sort of slush pond and got a little unlucky hitting the post, stayed with it, and it felt like more than 55% of a win. It felt like they actually came back and won the game.
They took a lot of shots to the mouth in the weekend overall, but you come away with it with a win. I mean, it counts in your record. You can say you're 5-1, and it goes down in the standings and the rankings for the pairwise in a different column. But overall, a win is a win. You got out of there not totally down bad, I guess you could say. But overall, they learned some lessons. They didn't get totally annihilated, and you just get on the bus and you move on to the next series. And, you know, right now it's still too early to really be looking at it, but in the RPI numbers, you're fine right at the top of the country. So you're going to, this is a broader point as we move into our sort of around the Big Ten / wrap up. But you're going to, even in the best case scenarios for this season, right? We talked about this at the start of the year. Your best case scenario, winning a national championship, was like a 34-6 team, something like that, right? We talked about that, because hockey is not basketball, and it's also not football. Teams in hockey do not go 73-9. They also don't go 63-19, which is the thing you see quite often in the NBA.
Yeah. Like
the best hockey teams ever in the NHL win 50-55 games.
And it's like baseball.
Then they have some ties thrown in. Occasionally you get a team that does win 60, but that's happened like twice in the last 50 years. So this is a sport where you don't have teams that just totally run the table. There's no 16-0 here. Mm-hmm. So even the best case scenario for this team, well, you're going to have six-ish losses probably, just looking at historically what great teams have done. And I'm fine with one of those losses being Western Michigan.
Oh, yeah.
I think that I said this on MCO Radio. It sent the entire podcast into an uproar. But I think that they, Western Michigan, is the third or fourth, but probably the third best team on Michigan's schedule left the rest of the way. I think
after Minnesota,
the UMass and the Minnesota series were the two that I would argue. And I'm not even sure if UMass is better than Western. They probably are, but we'll see. I mean, I don't think Wisconsin's better. I don't think that Ohio State, Michigan State, or Penn State are better. And I think Notre Dame's a pretty solid team, but I need to see the proof that they're a better team than Western Michigan right now.
Yep.
And you look at this season, you have the icebreaker and then Western. That's four games. You have four against Minnesota. You have two against UMass. And then pick your last two, the other Western game in December when we see them again at Yost.
And Tech, right?
And Tech, yeah. Or you pick two against Notre Dame, maybe at Compton, I don't know. But if you've got 12 really hard games, you're already through four of them, and you only lost one, that's a pretty good spot.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I'm definitely fine with that. You're going to lose games here or there, and I'd rather lose them to teams that won't mess up your pairwise.
And in October.
Yeah.
Like, this is where you want to learn your lessons. I mean, this, people forget that, you know, just because a lot of this team was around last year doesn't mean that this is one of the oldest teams. I mean, they're still exceedingly young and at every position except, you know, maybe defense. And, you know, there's going to be growing pains at times as these players are, you know, reach their, you know, 50th college hockey and 40th college hockey game of their careers even. So I think that, like, they had some house money to play with coming into this weekend. You look at what they did last weekend, and it was pretty clear that they were the number one team in the country. They're not going to hold that ranking, but going into next weekend, I should say, but so what? Like, who cares about a random number? I mean, it's fun, but in the end, you want to become a better hockey team, and I want them to be a good hockey team in January and February and March, not necessarily lighting up college hockey in the fall and then kind of getting caught up to, I guess.
Yeah, and this team absolutely is a better team now because of playing Western Michigan.
Yep. Duluth, Minnesota State, and Western, three different, very different teams, very different styles. And Michigan actually did pretty well over that stretch, as you just said. So,
and by the way, Duluth is looking pretty good right now. They are College Hockey News' team of the week. They had a really good weekend last weekend. So that looks like a pretty good win. They swept Minnesota. And, you know, Minnesota State continues to play well. So right now your resume looks pretty decent.
Yep. So we can look at some other teams. Notre Dame had a weird overtime loss to RIT at home. They were down 2-0 in this game. I actually watched a little bit of this game. I think it was a Thursday night game. And came back to tie it and then lost in overtime after almost winning it. And I mean, that's just this 3-on-3 overtime stuff where, I don't know, you win, I guess, yay. But you can also lose those very easily. And then they beat RIT again. You mentioned that RIT is maybe the one team in Atlantic that it's might be in some worlds okay to lose to.
And they're a decent program, at least. I think they're right there with like Air Force as a team that you could feel like, okay, that's probably not the worst thing ever, but it is still pretty bad.
And you mentioned that Minnesota lost twice to Duluth, but it's Duluth. They're always a top 5 or 10 team.
Yeah, but I mean, let's just be clear here. Comparatively, Minnesota is 1-3 against St. Cloud and Duluth. So
okay,
compare that to Michigan, 3-1 against Minnesota State, Western, and Duluth. So I think, you know, Michigan right now has the stronger resume of the two.
Penn State's 5-1. They beat Long Island, or drank two Long Islands, as you might say. They beat Niagara twice and Canisius, and then lost to Canisius. I forgot about that game. I think that was opening weekend.
Yeah, Penn State, Guy Gadowski really loaded up the non-conference there with six Atlantic Hockey games to start the season. So we know nothing about Penn State.
Ohio State's 2-1-1. They beat UConn twice. I was talking to Craig, and he said that he did not know that UConn had a hockey team.
Yeah, they were kind of decent in hockey last year, but also not a very tough non-conference schedule. They do have Jakub Dobish, looks like a pretty decent goalie for them. He was their incoming freshman, was their like lone draft guy. Had a shutout against, I think it was UConn. He looks pretty good so far, but that's all we really know. I don't think they can score very much.
Michigan State beat Miami of Ohio, what, a week or two ago, they lost and beat Air Force. And then this past weekend, they lost and tied to UMass Lowell. And UMass Lowell is not as good as they were a few years ago, I don't think. They've come down.
No, they were not a tournament caliber team last year. But it's tough to say what they'll be this year. But that resume looks very much like a team that's kind of what they've been for several years now.
So now we get to our Wisconsin preview section. They are 2-4. They've beaten Army twice. They've lost to Michigan Tech twice and lost to St. Cloud twice.
And their games against Tech, let me look at their games against St. Cloud, but their games against Tech were not close.
Yeah. Well, I did my preliminary like 8-6 stats thing.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
And they
lost to Tech 5-2 and 5-1. They lost to St. Cloud 5-1 and 4-1. So they did well against Army and were not really deserving to be on the same ice as the, you know, tournament caliber teams they've played.
So it's only 6 games. They are 20th in Corsi, which means they have the puck a little bit. Their power play percentage is at 5%, which seems low.
Small sample size.
Their PK is at 58%, which
is... Small sample size, but still not good.
But that's not trending in the right direction by any means. They do not have anyone over a half a point per game.
Well, they can't score. They've scored in total 2-1-4-1-1-1 in their
ten goals in 6... In 6 games is
and 4 of them coming in one of the games. They've scored 1 or less in 4 of their 6 games.
Yeah, that's yeah.
They've also knew that losing all of your forwards and not really replacing them with anybody could lead to offensive problems.
But it's not just that. It doesn't end there. They've also given up 20 goals in 6 games, which is not as bad as only scoring 6, but
well, what's interesting about that is that Cameron Rowe, who I thought was their better goalie last year, as opposed to Robbie Badoon, Rowe is back, and he has been bad.
4.23 and 8.38.
Yeah, and on the contrary, they have Jared Moe.
So I wrote down, is he the Minnesota guy?
Yeah, he's the Minnesota guy.
So he went from Minnesota to Wisconsin?
Yeah, Jared Moe, not related to Larry and Curly, but he used to be in a tandem with JLF, and JLF, you know, killed him off, and so he had to leave. And then he transferred in conference to a rival school, just kind of
weird,
4 hours west, and relocated to the Badgers. And so far, his numbers are a lot better, a 922 save percentage. But it's pretty clear that they've been doing some switching because both guys have appeared in a lot of games.
Well, they gave up 20 goals. I'm sure there's a lot to go around.
I mean, they've played 6 total games and both goalies have played in 4 games. So,
yeah.
And Ben Garrity has played in one game.
I was going to say, their third goalie's played.
So, a lot going on there. Let me look at who they started in the St. Cloud series.
Is that where you would...
That.
I mean, I would think that given these numbers right now, we're at least going to see Mo in the first game, right?
Well, they were
starting
Badoon like probably way after they like should have not been starting him.
You mean last year?
Yeah, they gave him a lot more chances than I think he deserved because he started the year well, but then it was pretty clear that Rowe was better and they just kept running him out there for a period of time that I thought was not correct, but they started Jared Moe in the first game against St. Cloud, and in the second game against St. Cloud, they started Cameron Rowe, and then he got chased, so they brought Jared Moe in for the third period after 40 minutes. Cameron Rowe gave up 5 goals on 18 shots in 40 minutes, so I would think we're going to see
Moe
for all at of least, the games.
Well,
until he gets chased.
And then we might even see him the next night.
Yeah.
So this series is an interesting series. It's helpful for you football fans because it is Thursday, Friday, which means this should post on a Wednesday morning. And then the next day will be the game against Wisconsin, 7 p.m. It's a little bit earlier than normal. It's also on Big Ten Network. So hooray, people get to see it. Friday will be at 7:30, the normal time on BTN Plus. Boo. But at least we got one BTN game this weekend. And by Friday night, we will have concluded our first 2 Big Ten games against, I don't know who the worst team is, but in the Big Ten right now, but Wisconsin is
they're not a very good
has their hand in it.
They're not a very good team, but the thing about Wisconsin is that we know they're not tourney caliber, but we don't know that about the other teams because they were chicken, right? They didn't schedule those teams. So we could very easily know that Ohio State, Penn State, and MSU are a lot worse if they had scheduled.
They played anyone.
But let's be frank, those really good teams were not going to be scheduling them. So,
well, and
it was a mutual decision.
State played Miami of Ohio, which has been
they played a decent team. But my point is that Wisconsin made the tournament last year. So if they call up St. Cloud, St. Cloud's like, sure, we'll play you.
Yeah.
But they were not going to do that with MSU, let's be frank.
Just as much Sparty haze we can get in on this podcast.
Well, no, it's just the facts that they're not going out of their way to schedule a low-level Big Ten team. That's not really who they're looking to play.
So anything less than 6 points from this series is, I mean, you got to take two against this team, right?
Yeah. I mean, this is especially the first conference series, time to set the tone. And
it's at home.
Yep, at home. Halloween at Yost, I think, is the Friday night game.
It's Friday game, yeah.
So,
what are you going to be for Halloween?
I am not really going as anything. I'm not going anywhere on Halloween, I don't think. So, I did buy Halloween candy the other day. So.
Did you?
Yeah.
Are you going to be a Lions fan for Halloween?
I'm always a Lions fan.
Are you going to be a happy Lions fan for Halloween? That's what you should be.
I was Jim Schwartz 1 year for Halloween.
We have photos.
That'll be
I think everyone wants to see photos of this.
Maybe if this.
Did you get mad about handshakes?
No, I actually hated Jim Harbaugh for a while because of that.
Oh, geez.
I was a strong Jim Schwartz defender.
Is that why you dressed up as this?
Well, that was the 2011 year where they started 5-0. That was like a peak of Lions football the last 25 years. So, no problems with Jim Schwartz.
I think that we're all just going to think about you being Jim Schwartz for the last few moments of this podcast.
Well, that's because it's ending now. Thank you for listening to Michigan HockeyCast 4.4 for Alex Drain and David Pasternak. Come back next week where we will know a little bit more about the Big Ten teams, but probably not much.